All right, let's open up our Bibles to the book of Numbers. We've covered Genesis and Exodus and Leviticus, and now we've made it a fair way into the book of Numbers. And today we want to draw your attention there to chapter 22. And there are some crazy stories in the Bible, aren't there? I mean, you think of these insane stories that you come across. You know, you've got Noah and the ark, and you've got Jonah and the great fish. We see some crazy miracles going on in the life of Elijah and Elisha. We're gonna see some crazy things in the book of Joshua when we get to it, but I am telling you, there is not a crazier story in the Bible than the one that we find here in chapter 22. If you struggle with Jonah and the great fish, I guarantee you're going to struggle with this chapter here. And it is going to challenge us just on how big of a God is it that we serve. What can God do? What can God not do? Now, leading up to chapter 22, you remember that Israel is on its final approach for the taking of the promised land. Now, they were here 38 years before this, and what a disaster that turned out to be. And so now that generation has been, they've died, they've been buried out into the wilderness, and so now this second generation, they're going to come in, and you remember that the Lord had instructed them that they were to travel on the east side of Edom and Moab, and then as they arrived at Ammon, where the Amorites were at, in order to get to the Jordan River, they were going to have to cross their territory. Moses wrote them a very polite letter. Gee, guys, we'd like to just get safe passage. We'll you know, fix anything that we break. We're not going to use any of your resources. We'll eat our own food, drink our own water. We'll leave the place cleaner than we found it. And not only does Ammon say no, but Ammon comes out after them with their military. So what happened then is they had a southern campaign against a guy by the name of Sihon. And then they had a northern campaign against King Og. And the result of these two military victories was the very last thing that we read in chapter 21, and that was that Israel then possessed their land. So what we now have is the Ammonites are completely out of the picture. Israel's wiped them out. Israel is in control of Ammonite territory, and so they are parked right there on the front doorstep of Moab. Now, I'm sure Moab was hoping that the Amorites could have taken care of this problem, but they didn't. And so now here you've got this Moabite king, and he sees 2 to 3 million people that have just wiped out the Amorites. And so for all he knows, they're going to come after him. Now remember, they're not interested in going south. They're interested in going straight west. That's how God is going to lead them. Their beef was not with Ammon. Their beef was not with Moab. They just needed to get to the Jordan River so that they could cross over and get into the promised land. And so this king is now freaking out, and he is assuming that Moab is going to be the next victim of this Israeli military campaign. Now, the only reason why Israel went to battle is because they were attacked first. So we read now, and this is kind of an interesting setup to this story, in verse 3. So we're told, all right, now Ammon, they're all upset. And in verse 3, or Moab was exceedingly afraid of the people because they were many, right? 2 to 3 million. And Moab was sick with dread because of the children of Israel. And so Moab said to the elders of Midian, "Now this company will lick up everything around us as an ox licks up the grass of the field." And Balak, the son of Zippor, was king of the Moabites at that time. So this guy now is beginning to prepare for war. And isn't it fascinating? He hasn't even spoken a word to Israel. I've pastored, for just years and years, And I can say, beyond any shadow of a doubt, that the number one reason why we ever experience, most of the time, why we would experience trouble, and you certainly see it in your marriages, is when you just don't communicate, when you just don't talk. And how many of us have gone off to war, right? Or how many of us, we've developed this whole scenario in our mind that they're mad, and they're upset, and they're this, and they're that. And then just as luck would have it, we spend a five-minute conversation with them, and we realize we totally misjudged the whole thing. Misjudged situation, misjudged, you know, and they don't have a problem with us at all. It happens because we just don't communicate. Now, if this king would have but bothered to send some kind of messenger to Israel and say, hey, are you guys going to attack us here? That he would have been surprised to learn that their God told them that they were not to attack the Moabites, that they would be doing something that their God had told them not to do. Now, we come across this, we will come across this, in the book of Deuteronomy, when Moses is rehearsing their history with Israel. Moses will say to them in chapter 2, verse 9, the Lord warned us, do not bother the Moabites, the descendants of Lot, or start a war with them. I've given them Ar as their property, and I will not give you any of their land. So it was never in the cards for Israel to go after Moab. And if they just would have asked a few questions, they would have found this out. And how many times do we find ourselves at war with some people just because we haven't effectively communicated what we were thinking and gave them an opportunity that they could communicate to us what it was that they were thinking? Now, you have to understand, this king has just witnessed Israel. They're on a win streak, 3-0. They've wiped out one Canaanite. They've wiped out two Amorites. I mean, in order for them to be victorious, because they're a weaker power, they certainly were weaker than the Amorites. And so this guy realizes that they're going to have to take an unconventional approach in their attack of Israel. And that unconventional approach is going to be, we don't need a general leading our troops. We need a wizard. That's what we need. We need a wizard. We got to get a wizard out there in front of the troops. Curse Israel. And then we're going to be victorious. And he knows just the wizard that he's going to get. And this now introduces us to one of the most mysterious guys in all of the Old Testament, this fascinating guy by the name of Balaam. Now, Balaam is dwelling over by the Euphrates River. He is hundreds of miles away from Moab. And so this king now sends a contingency of princes with a bunch of money, and they're going to convince this wizard to come and to curse Israel and hopefully to give them victory. So notice in verse 6, now these messengers arrive there, and they say to Balaam, please come at once. Curse this people for me, for they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall be able to defeat them and drive them out of the land, for I know that whom you bless is blessed, and whom you curse is cursed. Now, as I say, this guy is a great mystery. This is a non-Jew, and this is a guy that has an incredible connection to the spirit realm. This is a guy who knows God. Now, very interesting, Balak, the name Balak means devastator. The name Balaam, the wizard here, means devourer. So here you've got people of God, they're facing the devastator, they're facing the devourer, but they don't got anything to fear at all because God is watching over them and God is going to keep them. It doesn't matter what big, bad, ugly individual is coming after you. The Lord loves you, and the Lord is going to be keeping you. Now, think about this. This king, he's dwelling now down here in the south by the Dead Sea, and he hears about this wizard over here on the Euphrates River. Now, there's no internet. There's no radio. There's no TV. There's no marketing firms. I mean, how in the world, how famous would you have to be at this time in history for word to travel? The travel route was over 400 miles for this king down there by the Dead Sea to understand there is a guy that is so connected with the spiritual realm. This guy knows God. That's what we have to understand. God talks to this guy, right? This is not a Las Vegas magician here. This is a guy who knows God. In fact, we're going to see in verse 18, he says, I will only speak what the Lord my God tells me to speak. This guy is speaking about having a relationship with the God of Israel. The God of Israel comes to this guy. The God of Israel talks to this guy. I mean, this is a mysterious character, to be sure. And so these guys say to him, hey, you come, boss wants you there, he'll pay you a handsome reward. All he needs is for you to come down and to curse these people. Well, Balaam says, you just spend the night, just relax. I'm going to go seek God, and God will tell me what it is that I'm supposed to do. Well, notice in verse 12 that God said to Balaam, hey, Balaam lays this all out for the Lord. Hey, these guys are from down there, want me to curse. And so God said to Balaam, you shall not go with them, and you shall not curse the people, for they are blessed. Now, can I go, God? Can I go? Notice he says two things. You shall not go, and you shall not curse. Now, I don't know how you could mishear this. I don't know how you could misinterpret this. I think any of us here with any kind of working capacity in our brain would understand what the will of God was for our life at this moment. We are not to go, and we are not to curse. And the reason why we shouldn't curse is that, notice he says, for they are blessed. So cut and dry. This is very clear here. Don't go. Do not curse. All right? Now, so Balaam now, he hears this. And so he gets up the next morning. And this is fascinating here. Now, he says, go to your land. All right? He gets up the next morning. Go to your land, for the Lord has refused to give me permission to go with you. Now, there's a couple of things I want you to notice here. First thing I want you to notice is that temptation always circles back. Temptation never comes knocking once. Temptation will come knocking over and over and over again until you effectively slam the door in its face. If you are too passive in the closing of the door on temptation, I guarantee you that temptation is going to be back before you know it. So here this guy is. This guy says, well, you know, gee, you know, if it was up to me, you know, if it was my call, sure, I'd probably be. But, you know, God said no. I mean, so look, this is not my call. This is not my decision. I don't want to offend in any way. Please don't misunderstand. God is just telling me that I can't go. Now, you know that they're going to go back to Balak, and Balak is going to say, now, what exactly did he say? Well, you know, it kind of sounded like he was willing to come, but, you know, his God wasn't going to let him. I mean, look, if he would have just said, no way, there is no way on God's green earth that I will ever, 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 ever go with you guys. Look, the door would have been shut. Imagine there's somebody at your place of work. They are of the opposite sex, and they approach you with a possible opportunity with them, and you say, well, gee, you know, I just probably shouldn't, whatever. And you just awkwardly get out of that conversation. I guarantee you, they will approach you again. But if you say, are you nuts? Are you out of your mind? Do you think I'm going to flush my marriage down the toilet? Do you think I want my children to grow up disrespecting me and thinking that I'm such an idiot? Do you realize what this is going to do with my reputation with the company, what this is going to do with my reputation with my friends? You are out of your mind, right? You have closed the door on temptation. This guy is going to end up being tempted the second time because he was not aggressive in his presentation of what he was told by God. Now, the second thing I want you to notice that he is guilty of not giving them the full counsel of God, right? God said, it's not going to work because they're blessed, right? He just should have told them that. Look, cursing, it's not going to work. My God has told me these people are blessed. I can't go. I can't curse. They're blessed. See you later. Adios, right? Drive careful on the way home. Well, notice then, they end up going back. And you know, again, Balaam, well, how did he say it? And, you know, did he really sound like he meant it, you know? And so notice in verse 15, then Balak again sent princes. Now notice more numerous and more honorable. So there's a, I mean, now he's sending the limos up there, right? And they were more honorable. And they came to Balaam and they said unto him, thus says Balak, the son of Zippor, please let nothing hinder you from coming to me, for I will certainly honor you greatly, and I will do whatever you say to me. Therefore, please come and curse this people for me. So more important people have come, and more importantly, these important people have said to him, here's a blank check. You can put as many zeros on this check as you want to. It just whatever you ask of me, I am going to do. Now, this seems to be what this guy's problem was. That, in fact, when Peter in 2 Peter is talking about false teachers and false prophets that we have to deal with in the church, he said, they have forsaken the right way. They've gone astray following the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the wages of unrighteousness. This was his motivator. He wasn't being motivated by pride. He wasn't being motivated by ego so much. He's being motivated by greed. And then Jude tells us in verse 11, woe unto them, again, talking about false teachers, for they have gone the way of Cain and have run greedily in the air of Balaam for profit. So this is a guy's problem. This guy is a spiritual hired gun, right? He will use his giftedness to the highest bidder, and he is prostituting the gift of. This guy has an incredible gift. I mean, even the unbelieving world says, this guy has such a connection with God. He curses you. Oh, I feel sorry for you because you're going to be cursed. He blesses you. Oh, I'm envious of you because I know that you're going to end up being blessed. So this guy has a dynamic spiritual gift, but he is not using it for the glory of God. He is using it to enrich himself. And boy, have we seen that throughout the history of Christianity. Now, compare Balaam with what we have with the prophet Daniel. Remember, Daniel was called in by the king. The king's freaked out with his hand writing on the wall. And the king says, you know, I'm gonna give you whatever you want. And you remember that Daniel answered in chapter 5 of Daniel, let your gifts be for yourself and give your reward to another. Yet I will read the writing for the king or to the king and to make known unto him the interpreter. You keep your money. I am not in this for your money. I'm in it because this is what God has called me to do. And that's how you stay usable over the course of your life. Daniel was used from the beginning to the end because Daniel was willing to be used for the glory of God. Daniel wasn't in it to be praised. Daniel wasn't in it, for the money, if you will. And so he says to these guys, now, why does he even have to ask God? He already has the answer, right? He's got the answer. Don't go. Don't curse. How many times, though, we find ourselves back in our prayer closet? Now, God, are you really sure that my idea that you said no to 30 minutes ago isn't really a good idea? You know, you've had 30 minutes to kind of sit on it, think about this idea, think about my proposal, and I know you said no, but maybe you now might say yes. So he goes back now, and he's going to ask God now the second time. And so he goes back, explains everything to the Lord, and notice that we read that God came to Balaam at night and said unto him, if the men come to call you, then you rise and you go with them. But only the word that I shall speak to you, that you shall do. Very interesting, right? So he goes back. Now, he already is told what the will of God is. Don't go, don't curse. Now the Lord says, all right, now if this happens, then go ahead and go. Well, notice then, verse 21, that he gets up early in the morning, and he immediately goes out there, and he starts saddling his donkey, and, you know, he's all set now for this trip. And so he takes off now. He's with these guys, taking off on his little donkey there. And notice in verse 22, then God's anger was arose because he went. And the angel took his stand in the way as an adversary against him. So he's in a attack position, you know, facing now Balaam. And he was riding the donkey and his two servants. Now, you look at verse 20 and you think God says, all right, you know, if they ask you to go, go. And then verse 22, God's going to kill him because he went. Now, we can read this so quickly, we can just think, well, would God make up his mind? You know, we read this so quickly, we think, well, God's giving him permission. God is not giving him permission. Go back and read verse 20 again. If they come, right, then get out of bed and then go. This guy got out of bed before anybody came and started packing his bags. He took that as God saying, yeah, you can go ahead and go. No, God is saying, look, you just stay in bed, and if they come and they get you, well, then, yeah, you go. But you better only say what it is that I tell you to say. So this guy gets up early in the morning. He does not wait for God's God's order to unfold, if you will, and just takes off. And so now God's going to wipe him out here with this angel. Now, as you continue in verse 23, very smart donkey here. The donkey sees the angel of the Lord, and he runs off the path. And Balaam, of course, when you're riding your donkey and your donkey doesn't behave, you beat your donkey, right? And so he smacks the donkey. And notice he got the donkey back on the road again and starts going down the road. And notice the angel of the Lord shows up again. Now, this time, notice that we're told here that the donkey, it's a narrow place. And so the donkey now smashes Balaam's leg between the side of the donkey and this stone wall, smashed his leg. And you can just see this unfold, can't you? This guy just, he's in a hurry. He's in a hurry because there is a blank check waiting for him. And now he is on this idiotic donkey, and his leg just got smashed. Now not only is he mad and impatient, now all of a sudden, now he's hurt, right? Well, then there comes this very narrow place where the donkey can't go to the right or the left, so the donkey just lays down on the ground. And notice that Balaam gets off this animal and starts wailing on this animal. Now, here's where it gets very interesting, doesn't it? Notice in verse 28, then the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam, what have I done to you that you have struck me three times? And Balaam, now you know you're out of your mind when you debate with a donkey and you don't know you're debating with a donkey. And Balaam said to the donkey, because you have abused me, I wish there was a sword in my hand, for now I would kill you. All right? So there are people that would say, now wait, do you really believe that the Lord speaks through donkeys? Of course, speaks through donkeys. I mean, every Sunday, how many pulpits in America do you hear donkeys, you know, speaking for the Lord, if you will? And now look, this guy is just freaking out over this situation. And I think, you know, when a person's anger really rises above what is appropriate for the situation, you know that there is something really going on in that person. And I've just seen this throughout the years, that when there is a display of anger that is just way over the top. I mean, it is not appropriate for what the situation calls for. Now this guy's donkey has laid down, and now he's saying, I want to cut you up in little bitty pieces if I had a sword in my hand. It is just going way over the top here. He is in such a rage that he's not able to discern, I'm talking to a donkey now. Now, that's a little different. Now, we're also going to see here just in a moment, he loses his argument with the donkey. It's one thing to get in an argument with the donkey. It's certainly another thing to lose that argument. And then the Lord opens up his eyes, and he realizes this grave error that he's made. His eyes are now open. He sees the angel of the Lord. And it's interesting, notice, the angel of the Lord says to him, verse 33, he says, if she had not turned aside from me, surely I would have killed you by now and let her live. I mean, how's that for a put down? I'd killed you and I let that donkey live, right? So this guy now, obviously, the gravity of the situation has really hit him here. And so notice that he says in verse 34, Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know that you stood in the way again. That's not the issue. This guy is just so out to lunch spiritually. Isn't it fascinating? Here's a guy very in tune to the spiritual world, and yet when it comes to the will of God, totally out to lunch here. And he said, If I knew that you stood in the way against me. Now, therefore, notice, if it displeases you, right? Three times the angel is showing up to kill you. And now you're saying, well, you know, if it ticks you off. You know, again, this guy has lost his ability to reason. He has lost all discernment, and that, of course, is what greed and sin do to an individual. Look at what men will throw away for an hour's worth of pleasure. I mean, look at how, I mean, we have a very interesting value system, don't we? That when sin causes us to just run amok, we value things that we shouldn't value, and we devalue things that we shouldn't devalue. And so this idiot here is just saying, well, you know, if you know, you're displeased. Again, we got to go right back to what the will of God was. The will of God is don't go, don't curse, right? End of story. Yes, get back on the animal and go back. But notice in verse 39 now, Balaam, he went to Balak, and he came to Kirjath-Huzoth. And so he shows up, and you'll notice that just before this, you know, Balak said, you know, it took you a long time to get here. And Balaam basically, look, it's been a long day, just back off, right? I lost an argument with the donkey. I don't want to talk about it. You know, just be thankful that I'm here. So he shows up. And what he does is that he takes him now to Kirjath-Huzoth, and this would be higher territory. Israel is sort of down now in that Jordan River Valley. They're up here on this higher ground. This is what it would have looked like. Israel, you can imagine 2-3 million people down there on the valley floor. They felt that if you cursed a person, that the curse was more effective if you were able to see them while you're putting the curse on them. And so he takes them where he's got this vantage point where he's going to be able to see the entire nation of Israel just camped out there in the valley floor, and he just wants them to curse them. They have some kind of this religious ceremony. They're offering animals here to Baal. So again, very interesting. This guy now is dealing with false gods. This guy is a part of a satanic ritual, and yet this is a guy that hears from God. This is a guy that has a very unusual connection with the Lord. So he certainly is throwing off some very confusing and very conflicting messages, isn't he? And so then in verse 41, it says, and so it was the next day that he took Balaam and he brought him up to the high places of Baal, and from there that he might observe the extent of the people. It is always dangerous for us to be for what God is against. It's always dangerous to be against what it is that the Lord is for. And this is a story of a very gifted individual, a highly gifted individual. Apparently, there have been years of service that he has offered to the Lord. There's been enough time where he has served God to get a message of his credibility all the way from the Euphrates River all the way down to the Dead Sea. This is a guy that even the unbelievers, even the pagans understand, this guy has a great connection to the spiritual world. A tremendous guy. Tremendous guy, mysterious guy to be sure. Where did he come from? What was his connection with the Lord? How did the Lord become the Lord his God? Was it a situation like what Abraham had? Did the Lord just suddenly appear to this guy and just sovereignly choose this guy? We don't really know. But this is a guy, highly gifted and highly blessed of God. God comes to him. God speaks to this man. Probably none of us here have had this kind of an experience where God literally has come to us and spoken to us. But now, this is a situation where a man with great privilege, a man with great giftedness, now ends up in a very, very dangerous place. And he ends up in a wrong place. Now, when you and I, when we end up in a wrong place, we either end up where we've got a wrong head, and I've seen that through the years. I've seen a believer, they got a right heart, but man, do they have a goofy brain. They have a goofy head. I mean, they're just out there doing goofy things. And you look at them and you think, well, God bless them. I mean, you know, their heart's right, but their head is just wrong. Sometimes you end up in the wrong place because your head's wrong. Sometimes you end up like this guy in the wrong place because your heart is wrong. And the thing that I have seen through the years is that it is a lot easier for God to get a wrong-headed person back on the right track than it is for the Lord to get a wrong-hearted person back on the right track. Again, this is why Solomon just encourages us. Look, you got to guard your heart because, you know, out of it flow really the issues of life. Somewhere along the line, this man, this very gifted man, stopped guarding his heart. And he became a victim of greed. And now all of a sudden, instead of using his gift to glorify God, he's now using his gift he's prostituting his gift in order to enrich himself. So I think for us tonight, as we go to prayer, that one of our prayer concerns really should be praying for our hearts. Father in heaven, we thank you that these things were written for our learning. And there's something for us to learn out of this man Balaam's life. The Apostle Peter warned us, Jude warned us. And so, Father, I pray that we would take to heart that whatever opportunities, whatever giftedness we have, whatever it is that we got going on that we can use to glorify you, that we would use it to glorify you and not to somehow enrich ourselves or to glorify ourselves. Lord, give us ears to hear that when you say don't go, when you say don't curse, Lord, give us sensitive hearts that those kind of words will impact us and cause us to alter the course of our lives if that course is taking us in the wrong direction. Father, we thank you that you have been so faithful to guide, you have been so faithful to lead us, that, Lord, when we seek your will, we find your will. And so, Lord, I pray for my brothers and sisters that they'll just keep on seeking, keep on knocking, keep on asking. And Lord, give them ears to hear what your Spirit is saying. And Father, help us to live our lives in just a God-honoring, God-glorifying manner. For we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen.